We're going to call the House Committee on Rules to order, and especially with Representative Barton here,
yes.
It's important. That's the order part. And with that, we have a couple just public hearings and then some work sessions. Some of the work sessions, it's really just to look at some of the amendments and decide if we want to put them in before we do anything, because I don't like to send our poor revenue department crazy by having too many amendments out there without deciding if there's one that we really like. Otherwise, we aren't really moving those. The two that I would hope you'd look at and see if you have any concerns are House Bill 3033, which we are planning on moving today, and House Joint Resolution 43. But before that, we will start with opening a public hearing on House Bill 3042, and we're going to have our administrator give a short explanation.
Thank you, Chair Roland.
And we'll invite Mr. Barton, Representative Barton, up to the dais.
Members of the committee, House Bill 3042 designates the Office of County Commissioner as nonpartisan. It also clarifies the election process for nonpartisan offices. At the present time, a number of local offices are filled on a nonpartisan basis. ORS 240.002 sub 7 currently provides that the following official shall be elected on a nonpartisan basis. Elected officials of a metropolitan service district, justices of the peace, county clerk, county assessor, county surveyor, county treasurer, sheriff, district attorney, and any office designated nonpartisan by a home rule charter. House Bill 3042 would add the Office of County Commissioner to the list of nonpartisan offices in ORS 240.002 sub 7.
Thank you very much. And with that, Representative Barton, it's so nice to have you visiting the Rules Committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. I appreciate your time and hearing the bill today. Really, this bill, as I see it, presents two questions. The first question is it good public policy to have county commissioners be that office be nonpartisan? The second question is, if so, should the legislature mandate that on Oregon's 36 counties? And I believe the answer to both questions is yes, and in order to support this bill, I believe that you too must answer yes to both questions. So let me take each question in turn, if I may. The first question being, should that office, the county Office of County Commissioner, be nonpartisan? And I can think of essentially three primary arguments in favor of that. Most of which, when you think through, are fairly predictable. That voters should be presented with, for example, the largest possible pool of candidates, including candidates who don't fit traditional political labels. Second argument, perhaps more salient, is we want candidates to focus on the issues instead of party affiliation. And when this is particularly pertinent for county commissioners who spend the majority of their time on basic infrastructure questions instead of what might be considered more traditionally partisan issues, many of which I suppose we deal with at the state level. And third, county commissions are already, as oftentimes 3 or 5 members in this state, and they are very prone to fissure and divide. And partisan affiliation and partisan division within county commissions often exacerbate some of the natural political tendencies of county commissions. So that is why I believe the first question is yes, should county commissioners be nonpartisan office in Oregon? The second question, I think, is actually the more interesting one. By the way, the first question, when voters typically have that choice before them, as they often do for many counties, voters typically overwhelmingly say yes, this should be a nonpartisan office. I think the second question is more difficult for me, and also I would argue the more interesting one. And that is, even if you do think it is better public policy, it is better to have a county commissioner be nonpartisan, is it this legislature's prerogative? It's certainly our prerogative, but should we in turn mandate that on all 36 counties? And yes, actually, I believe the argument is the answer should be yes. I do believe we in the state of Oregon, this legislature, does have a compelling interest in seeing that the delivery of basic services in county levels should not be unnecessarily politicized. Indeed, I also think that there's compelling evidence that the vast majority of Oregonians support that, and I think we should facilitate that the manifestation of public will. Also, a third reason is that the legislature has a compelling interest, I think, in maximizing participation in elections. And when most county commissions and nonpartisan offices are election, essentially you have what is called a French-style system, which 50% plus one, it tends to increase turnout. And fourth, again, the administrator mentioned the number of offices that already this legislature has required being nonpartisan in the counties. For example, sheriff and district attorney. There are good reasons for each and every one of those, and I think they apply with equal force. This is not an unprecedented step. I think it applies to the Office of County Commissioner. I think the answer is yes to both questions, and thus I think 3042 is a good bill and should pass.
Questions? Representative Garrard.
As a former county commissioner for two terms, and in Klamath County, if you don't get reelected, you could get shot. So it's, you know.
It's true in East Clackamas as well.
Yeah, you didn't offer that alternative, but we just had a vote in Klamath County last November as to a home rule charter versus non-home rule charter, and part of that was making the commissioner positions nonpartisan. It was defeated by a 75-25 margin. So when you speak that you believe the majority of Oregonians are for this, please remember that Eastern Oregon is not part of the Willamette Valley. Would this apply to home rule counties or just to home rule counties?
Mr. Chair, Representative, thank you for the question. I really am not qualified to speak to the election or analyze it in any way in Klamath County. It is my understanding, however, that there were a series of issues in that election which were defeated by a sizable majority. I simply do not have polling on this. I cannot speak to it. And I can see that there are regional differences. That said, I stand by my opinion that if the question were presented in isolation, should the Office of County Commission be nonpartisan, I believe that the majority of Oregonians would support that. Regarding your question as to does this affect home rule, the bill as written, in my opinion, it would apply to all 36 counties in Oregon, home rule or otherwise. The bill could be amended to address that or differentiate, but as currently written, it does not.
One quick follow-up, Representative Barton. In my neck of the woods, people use the political affiliation. Quite often you get people running for county commissioner that you do know nothing about. And I actually went through one primary election where there was not one town hall, not one candidate's night, nothing, to allow the candidates to identify themselves. Had they been nonpartisan, the voters would have had no opportunity whatsoever to ever discuss the issues. And so the political designation was used as an identifier as to philosophically where that particular candidate was. So again, I caution you in this area that it's really applicable in many different ways.
Mr. Chair and Representative, you're absolutely right that partisan affiliation is what political scientists call a heuristic, i.e. it's a shortcut by which voters who choose to, for example, not be engaged in the political process, that is their prerogative, it's essentially shorthand for them to make political decisions without further investigating the issues. And I recognize that. And indeed, I happen to think that practice in the Office of County Commission is not good practice, and that is actually one of the reasons why this bill is, I'm bringing this here in this legislature, is I think that heuristic is actually not necessarily applicable in any relevant way to the Office of County Commission, respectfully, as it might be, for example, to the state legislature, in which the decisions are often more political. I don't think it's a very valid one, for example, infrastructure questions or sheriff services or same reason for district attorney. It should not also be in terms of prosecution.
Just one comment. Mr.
Absolutely.
Chair.
Representative.
I'd love to debate the issue with you. This is probably not the forum, but anytime. So.
Thank you. Representative Jensen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think I could go through probably a long series of questions here. And just for the record, I'm not basing it on my particular county or any thoughts on my particular county and the county commissioners there. As it happens, they are nonpartisan in Umatilla County, but that's neither here nor there. I'm not sure that I understood, what your rationale was. You answered your own question that yes, they should be nonpartisan. Okay, I'm not sure that. I heard a compelling argument from you as to why they should be nonpartisan. And I'd be interested in that. As kind of a second thought, on this, it seems to me that we could, and pretty logically, I think, extend this out to state legislators. Should state legislators be nonpartisan? And I suppose when we're finished with that end of it, why is it that we as the state want to mandate to a county how to run their county when, at least given much of our present circumstances, we haven't necessarily demonstrated that as a state, we always can run our state.
Mr. Chair, Representative Jensen, thank you for the three questions, by my count. Your first and your third question, I tried to address in my opening remarks, evidently without much success, which is such as, first of all, why should a county commission be nonpartisan? That was your first question. Your third question is, even if you did think so, why should the state of Oregon compel it or get involved in what might be a local decision? And I, at the risk of repeating myself, ultimately I think that county commissions should be nonpartisan because the day-to-day operations, the questions before that these elected officials address, are not necessarily partisan in nature, unlike, for example, the state legislature, which I'll get to in a second. The third question is, should the state of Oregon get involved? Frankly, I find that the more interesting and challenging question. But ultimately, yes, I do believe, for some reasons I've stated, that we can and should, just as we have done for district attorney, sheriff, clerk, and a litany of other county offices. You asked a second question there, was should the legislature be nonpartisan? And I believe, I'm going off, I don't know where I'm getting this, I believe Nebraska has a nonpartisan legislature. It's the only one I'm aware of off the top of my head. And people are nodding yes, so I'm not aware of any others. And interestingly enough, although it is nonpartisan in Nebraska, it's my understanding that actually they tend to caucus anyway, and that the partisan affiliation, although technically not on the ballot, is typically fairly well known. That is something that typically does not happen in other nonpartisan races. And I would argue that's because the very nature of the job, the decisions we make here, have a partisan tinge that is simply not present when you're dealing with infrastructure questions.
Representative Jensen.
The question and the distinction here that somehow the county is not a partisan, I don't know. I haven't been a county commissioner, and I'd have to defer to my colleague who has been one. But I would strongly guess that there are some issues that appear before the county commissioners that there may be they may touch as much debate as we get here in the Capitol on some issues. The only difference being maybe that they don't have as many of them in most counties as we have here in the state legislature, so the debates can't go on quite as long as ours do. I guess, Mr. Chair, I have difficulty, understanding why I want to tell other people how to run their thing as long as their thing is working to the best of what they perceive to be their needs. I'm a little more of a kind of live and let live sort of person on this, and so I would I'd take some very strong argument before I could come off of that that position.
Mr. Chair, Representative Jensen, first of all, your point is well taken. Reasonable minds could differ on that, as again, I view that as an interesting question. And also to your point regarding the questions before a county commission, like you, I too have never served as a county commissioner. And unquestionably, they make decisions to which partisan affiliation might be what we previously called a relevant heuristic. But the same is absolutely true of decisions that a sheriff or district attorney makes. Nonetheless, I think there are very good and compelling reasons why we, to the extent possible, want to transform the public discourse away from merely one of Republican versus Democrat to policy ideas and how the office, which is essentially administrative in nature, should be administered.
Representative Edwards.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Barton, do you know how many of the 36 counties are nonpartisan and how many are partisan? I know my county is nonpartisan. I'm just curious.
Mr. Chair and Representative Edwards, I have a sheet in front of me, and the Association of Oregon Counties is planning, I believe, to testify soon. They are officially neutral. They have a sheet, which is actually a fascinating sheet that they're going to hand out to you, that shows all sorts of interesting information, including which ones are partisan, which ones are nonpartisan, which are home rule otherwise. And it's actually really interesting, 3 members, 5 members. It's amazing the variety of county commissions that we can structure in the state or indeed around the country. I learned all sorts of interesting things with my meeting with them.
Okay. Representative Garrard.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. You'll like this comment because, and I think it's appropriate to put it on the record, after being elected a county commissioner twice in Klamath, I cannot recall one instance in 4 years where the partisanship ever entered into my mind in addressing the issue before me. Republican or Democrat, and you're correct in that respect, the political aspect is removed to a great deal at the county commissioner's level. It is much more issue-oriented. And you also touched on another subject. If there's 3 commissioners, it's almost always 2-1. And if there's 5, it's 3-2 or whatever. That's where the politics really enters, is that you have a tendency to gravitate to other party members on the commission. So from those that respect, I think that your bill is a very interesting bill, and I just wanted to get that on record that you're right in those couple instances.
Mr. Chair and Representative, first of all, thank you. I've enjoyed this discussion. I doubt anyone else has, but nonetheless, it really is quite interesting. And you know, it's as a freshman member here, I'm astonished at the difference between 30 and 60. I can't imagine what a difference 3 and 5 makes.
It's much more personal.
Any further questions for this witness? Thank you very much.
Thank you.
With that, Ann Hennis from AOC. And it's really nice to see you in this yeah. role. So,
thank you.
I didn't mention that before, but thanks for being here.
Thanks. I'm enjoying it. For the record, my name is Ann Hannes, and I'm with the Association of Oregon Counties. And as the representative said, I provided a chart for all of you. I thought you might find it interesting given the discussion you're having today. And one of the things that becomes clear when you look at this is that counties do have different governance structures. It represents the diversity, it reflects the diversity of counties throughout the state. Basically, counties were considered agents of the state government until 1958 when home rule charters were approved by constitutional amendment. But not all counties are home rule. If you look on this chart, you'll see that on the very top, we have, we have 9 counties that are considered general law counties that have a full-time judge and 2 part-time commissioners. And if you see on that top tier of counties, all of the judges that have judicial responsibilities, those are all nonpartisan. However, the other commissioners are not, it's mixed. Some of them are partisan and some of them are not. And in those, in some of those counties, the judge there does have both probate and juvenile jurisdiction. That actually relates back to when the state was first formed, and that was the structure that was in the original state constitution of providing a judge with some judicial responsibilities and two commissioners. Then, you know, the next set generally is another general law, but these have county commissioners ranging from 3 to 5 members, and those are 18 counties. And for those counties, 5 of them are nonpartisan. And Jefferson County, I should add on there, is in the process of becoming nonpartisan. So that's their responsibilities are all are detailed in Chapter 203 of Oregon law. And then lastly, we have 9 counties that are home rule counties. And a home rule county is one where it has had a charter approved by the voters, and that charter allows the county to prescribe the organizations of a county government. So we've had other counties that, as Representative Garrard has said, have attempted also to have a charter, some of which have passed and some of which have not been approved, or some of which have started the process but never kind of got to the point of voter approval. So with that, AOC is neutral on this bill, but we do believe that local control is an important consideration.
Thank you very much. Any questions? I want to say thank you for the information. You know, I've known some of this, but this is a nice one-page place to see it because, and I had not quite gotten the idea that not all of the county commissioners in the general law counties were judges. Just the one who's in charge is the chair, is the judge.
Well, the judge, the judge is a full-time administrator commissioner. In all but 2 of those, they also have the judicial responsibilities of overseeing probate and juvenile.
Okay. Yeah, that's interesting.
So, it's really interesting.
It is that. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Is there anyone else who, because of the thrilling conversations, now feels that they need to say something? No one is rushing forward. Okay, we're going to close our public hearing on House Bill 3042, and we're going to open a public hearing on House Bill 3107. And we'll have a short explanation.
Thank you, Chair Roblin, members of the committee. House Bill 3107 exempts special districts from paying the expenses for district elections when the district election is held on the same day as the date, or same date as the date of the primary or general elections. Under existing law, except as otherwise provided in 4 specific statutes, and I won't bother you with the citations, they're in your staff measure summary, the expenses incurred for a district election shall be paid by the district. By state law, cities and the state cannot be charged for the cost of the election in the primary or general election. Cities cannot be charged.
Okay. So so people have an idea of actually why this is here. Last week we had a conversation about maybe, and I think Representative Edwards had a bill that talked about paying for postage because it was a problem, and then the whole idea that wow, some people don't pay their share and so on, and some people pay and some people don't, and the counties end up paying the majority of whatever is not being paid by anybody else. Early, before the session started, when I was writing this bill, it came about because the special districts, in fact, paid more often than other people did, but not the same as others. And I think the reason I wanted to hear this and hear comments is that the consistent thing is we are very inconsistent in the way we go about charging anyone for elections. In the backdrop of that, I am pleased to announce, I think most people have seen, there's some rulemaking that's going on with the Secretary of State's office to try to ease this. So regardless of these bills that are happening, there is at least a focus on some rules now that might start clarifying this issue a little bit better as well. And so To get it all on the table, I thought it was good to continue the conversation and point out the differences about why people think others should pay and they shouldn't and so on. So that's why we're having this discussion today. So with that, we'll just go down the order. So we have Annette Newingham, Tim Scott, and Mark Landauer. So nice of all these people to keep driving back and spending time with the Rules Committee.
Back again. For the record, I'm Annette Newingham. I'm the Lane County Clerk, and I'm here on behalf of the Oregon Association of County Clerks, Chair Roblin, members of the committee. I'm here today representing the Oregon Association of County Clerks in opposition to House Bill 3107, no surprise, which would exempt special districts from paying their apportioned election costs at the primary and general elections. It is understandable that the special districts would want the same as for the primary and the general as the cities and the state and not have to pay their portion costs at those two elections. However, removing all current exemptions and having every governmental agency pay their apportioned cost would be the more equitable process in place for all scheduled elections and would... because adding another exemption would place further burden on the counties that we already are, we're paying for the majority of the costs. Counties are right now responsible for the full amount for full-time staff. And that's something that I wanted to clarify, that that's not put into the cost that's appropriated out to the who we can bill. We go ahead and apportion out everybody out, whether we bill them or not. So that is a process, and it is being fine-tuned through this administrative rule. However, it still would be the same process of apportioning it all out, and then we only bill those we're allowed to bill, and they pay us back with an invoice, which in the case of the districts, that's all the time. And in the case of the cities, it's every election, but the state, the primary and the general, and the same for the state. And they do pay us back for those particular election costs. Full-time staff is not in that equation, but costs continue to rise for postage. Minimum wage has been increasing every year as well as the postage, and we do know that costs are going to continue. We're not in a situation where elections can be fee-based. We don't charge to... for people to register to vote, we don't, you know, there's things that just wouldn't be appropriate in the process of our electoral process, and we don't even suggest that. So it's more critical that we are reimbursed, we the counties, for the apportioned costs so that it's more equitable across. I've added, one thing I do want to point out is that State Measure 56 at the 2008 general election passed, which previously, only the general election required the 50 was exempted from the 50% supermajority. Now it's every May and November election. So therefore, it's very likely that we'll have an increase in file measures for the May primary elections, as well as other May and November elections. I have an attachment A, which represents that about 17% of all 2008 primary election costs were billable to the special districts, resulting in over 631,000, almost 632,000, reimbursed to the county statewide, obviously demonstrating the potential loss in revenue to the counties. And the attachment to A2, it's 28% of all 2008 general election costs were billable to the special districts, resulting in over $1,304,565 reimbursed to counties statewide. And that also would be a loss to the counties. And this is all general fund money, just to clarify. Attachment B, I just took a sampling of four counties, Multnomah, Lane County, Klamath County, and Marion County. And over a period of 3 years, the primary and the general election, and what portion cost was for the state, for the cities, for soil and water, which were not reimbursed for candidate filings, and the portion of the county and the special district. Now, yes, this, if the administrative rule goes forward and is changed, it may be a little bit different mix, but it still gives you a pretty good idea of how much the county general fund is impacted and is not reimbursed. I thank the committee for allowing me to testify here today and welcome any questions you might have.
I think we'll go and have all three and then we'll ask questions. So,
Chair Roblin, members of the committee, my name is Tim Scott. I'm the Director of Elections for Multnomah County. It should be no surprise that my testimony will be very similar to my colleagues. But I wanted to say for the record that on behalf of Multnomah County, we are opposing House Bill 3107 for all of the same reasons that Annette already went through. And only add that as the most populous county in Oregon, we pay the numbers that she gave you for statewide are mostly our costs. So we are primarily the ones getting reimbursed, and should this bill pass, we would lose that significant portion of our revenue. And I'd also like to point out that the special districts are the only jurisdiction in the general and the primary that we are able to reimburse costs from. So thank you for the opportunity to testify.
Thank you very much.
Good afternoon. Mark Landauer with the Special Districts Association of Oregon. Thank you, Chair Roblin, first of all, for introducing this bill and for also hearing this bill today. At the outset, I'd like to acknowledge we knew full well that the counties would have some difficulties with the bill that's before you today. And I want to thank the counties, the clerks, the Secretary of State's office. They've been willing to sit down with the special districts since January, and we've had some very productive talks about this. This bill primarily was introduced to be illustrative of the points that Chair Roblin had made at the outset of this bill. Let me just say a couple things. First of all, that I'm sure that many of the special districts, some of my favorites, vector control, library districts, so on, fire districts, rural fire districts, community college, school districts would all like to have the same treatment as the state and cities, frankly, to be able to conduct elections without having to bear any costs for those is obviously an attractive proposition, particularly in these tough economic times. And as a result, that's frankly why we introduced the bill, knowing full well that it probably wouldn't happen. Nevertheless, it does raise an interesting point that this committee has struggled with or discussed over the last couple of weeks. And I'd like to say at this point, I would prefer that you not move the bill, particularly in this form. And the reason for that is as a result of the discussions that we've had with the clerks, the counties, as well as the Secretary of State back in January, we did propose ask the Secretary of State to open rulemaking to address how election costs are attributed to electoral districts. Under today's rules, election costs are apportioned by the number of registrants that are in an electoral district. The petition that we submitted asked that the Secretary of State give weight to the number of questions an electoral district poses to its electors as well. So both the number of registrants as well as the number of questions that are posed to those electors would be used in determining what ultimately an electoral district would be charged for an election. After some further conversations with the clerks and the counties, they pointed out that our petition had failed to include elective office holders as well. And we felt that was an absolutely valid, equitable point that they had made, and asked that they include that in the rulemaking if the Secretary of State chose to move forward. I have provided you a copy of the notice of rulemaking by the Secretary of State's office. And I also want to acknowledge that if this rule does go forward and is adopted by the Secretary of State, the counties will again bear a greater, in all likelihood, bear a greater cost of the elections as a result of this modification. But I will tell you as well that these modifications proposed in these rules will provide a truer cost accounting of how much an electoral district creates on the county. So we think that it is a fair, equitable way of determining what an electoral district's costs that they bear on the county are. And I want to thank Annette. I want to thank the other clerks who have been involved with this, Brenda Bays, Barry Pack, Ann Hannes with the counties. I think that this has been a very productive conversation, particularly on the rule portion. There is obviously a policy issue that is before you, but as a result of the conversations we've had, I'm frankly not necessarily interested and probably don't even have the votes here today to move 3107. So thank you very much, and I'd be happy to answer any questions that you may have.
Any questions for this group? I guess the one question, because we tried to answer this question last session with special districts, the issue came up that the special districts recognized that when there was a special election, i.e. not the general election, well, yeah, they need the special election. It's theirs. They should pay a cost. But when it comes to general election, and even the way it was written in law, it didn't seem to indicate that they should pay except in special elections, yet they do. We did get that kind of clarified at one time from legal counsel. They basically said, sorry, you get to pay it all the time. But when I read it over and over again, I kept reading it the same way, that why were they having to pay the regular elections? Any thoughts or comments on that? Just give you an opportunity to answer that one.
Well, I'm reading the statute right now, and I've read it a number of times. But it does make it clear that it is very unclear.
But it's been interpreted clearly.
Indeed. I'm sure that Annette can attest to the fact that when she sends a bill to special districts, that ultimately I hope they're paying on time and promptly, that she is receiving payment for those election costs.
Yeah, so that was another frustration part to me, was that I did not think it was very clear with regard to how they apportioned those costs to special districts, and different than everybody else. But yes.
If I may clarify, Chair Roblin and members of the committee, is that we do apportion the same way for everybody that's on the ballot. So that's something that I did want to clarify. It's no different how we do it. And every like when you go to that last example, it actually shows how we have it laid out for each one. The only difference is we build the districts and they pay us for it.
And the rest of them.
But it is factored in for everybody that's on the ballot, the state, the county, any districts, and any cities that are included.
Do you ever inadvertently send them a bill and hoping that they might send you a check?
Chair Roblin, no, we don't send a bill for people who aren't going to pay.
I wouldn't have expected that. Any other questions? Representative Nolan.
Forgive my ignorance, but you distinguish soil and water conservation districts distinct from special districts.
Yes.
Can you help me understand
Chair
that?
Chair Roblin, Representative Nolan, yes, it is different. The soil and water has a special provision in their statute. It's a special district, but the filing officer is the Department of Agriculture, not the state, and it is a state agency, but it's not the Secretary of State that's the filing officer. It's not the county clerk. It is the Department of Agriculture. They have an exemption for their candidate elections, so we even though they're countywide, statewide, really, every general election, we are unable to pay their or charge them for their portion costs. Only their measures is not exempted by statutes.
Thanks. So I wasn't so stupid.
It was not a silly question.
that is why we're having these different deals, so that we understand how truly how the counties are entrusted with doing this and how their hands are tied in more than a few places to get any of the reimbursement for it, so they pay the whole cost. And that makes the people who pay their share feel that it's not fair that they get a bill when they see all these other people on the ballot who don't have anything on the ballot. So it's a conversation I think we need to have if we're going to try to figure this out. And I do appreciate the Secretary of State is trying to at least get a system in place that people could agree to is a better way of apportioning it, and that we will still have to make the decision at some point. If once that's done, do we want to give the counties the option of billing all of those? It was a recommendation that came out of the task force that we did on the counties to work at the next session. So I just want to make sure that people were ready for that, because it's going to come forward at some point. So, and the counties can't wait, I think. Any other questions for this group? Nope. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Ann Hannes. And they could have each used their own box. Amber, League of Oregon Cities. Is it? I can't pronounce the last name.
Mr. Chair.
Oh. We'll have all three of you come up. We'll let Ann go. So she likes having the dais all to herself there.
Thank you. Thank you.
And thanks again.
For the record, again, Ann Hannes from Association of Oregon Counties. We really appreciate Mark Landauer's request not to act on this bill, because we do believe that House Bill 3107 moves us in the wrong direction from what was recommended by the Federal Forest Payments Task Force. Currently, as you heard, primary and general election costs are paid for by the counties, school districts, and special districts. The cities and the state are exempted from paying the cost of elections for the general and the primary. The cost of elections consumes about 8% of county's general fund discretionary budget, so it's not a small amount of the county's budget that are impacted by the cost of elections. And we view elections as a shared service, and the frequency and the cost and the number of candidates and issues can have a significant impact on county budgets. As a result of looking at this, the Federal Forest Payments Task Force agreed that the state should pick up its proportionate share of primary and general election costs in the future as a means of recognizing the shared responsibilities and compensating for the shared costs. You heard from Annette about what it would cost the state if the special districts were exempted, and that would be a significant cost to the counties. I won't go through that again. We do believe that there needs to be a discussion on how election costs should be allocated among the state, special districts, schools, cities, and counties, so that it should be in a fair and equitable way. And I appreciate your comments, Chair Roblin, about the constraints that counties are facing when trying to manage its costs. So thank you very much.
Any questions for this witness? Seeing none, thank you very much.
Thank you.
So now we can have our little group. Amber, and is it Betsy and Kevin?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and members of the committee. Andrea Fogg with the League of Oregon Cities. And today I have with me Betty Langwell, the city clerk with the City of Albany, and also Karen Johnson, the city recorder with the City of Independence. So the League, for the record, does not have a position on House Bill 3107, but we are very interested in the conversation on reapportioning election costs. We think this is a very important conversation that needs to be had. It is a complex issue. It is one that certainly is going to involve cost shifts. So we think it's very important that all of the parties be at the table and have this conversation, and we would like to participate and support doing that in the interim. And with that, I'd like to turn it over to our city experts so that they can add some comments.
Mr. Chair and committee members, my name is Betty Langwell, and I'm the city clerk for the city of Albany. And this is definitely a complicated issue, one that we hope we can sit down with the counties with and talk about. Because of the economic situation in our cities, costs go up just like they do for the county, and revenues are going down. I believe the district representative gave some good issues that need to be talked about and the complications of those issues. Especially for small cities, this could be costs of elections could be devastating. ORS mandates the counties to handle elections. It also mandates for them to, for the cities to bear the cost for the cities. If this is transferred to our smaller cities, even our bigger cities, we, because it is part of the general fund requirements, it could dip into other services that cities provide, like police protection, fire protection, building codes. You already know that we are having to lay off people in that area. It's just a real financial burden.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair, my name is Karen Johnson. I'm the city recorder for the City of Independence, Oregon, and I'm also the second vice president for the Oregon Association of Municipal Court Recorders. We would like to be at the table when we have discussions about cost shifting. It's a very complex issue and not one that should be taken lightly. In these economic times, it's really tempting to pass on costs elsewhere. In my own county, Polk County, they've seen significant loss of timber revenue, and the result of their budget is going to be huge. However, at the city level, we're also seeing the loss of those timber-related jobs, and so our problems are just as real. And so this issue must be carefully considered and with all parties at the table.
Thank you for being here. And I agree. Any questions for the cities? Yes, Representative Edwards.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I appreciate all of you for being here. I clearly oppose House Bill 3107 as it is written because it's going the wrong direction. I want to go the right direction on this. Andrea mentioned that they think this is an issue that everybody should be a part of, and they look forward to the opportunity to sit down with all parties in the interim. And I just wanted to note for the record that I've got a great bill that's sitting right here in this committee that didn't have to wait to the interim, that all parties could be party to a discussion about. Should we be interested in moving that direction and not kicking the can down the road one more session? So,
May I respond?
Please.
Mr. Chair, thank you, and Representative Edwards. We think this is a pretty big issue to tackle yet this session, and you all have many of those large issues on your plate already. And we do think it's consistent with what came out of the recommendation that Chair Roblin referenced in terms of this issue being one more session down the road.
Thank you very much. And I think our last person, again, if there's anyone out there who, because this stimulating conversation got them excited and wanted to spend some time up front, we'd love to have you. But Trevor Stark is the only person who chose to do that. Amazing. That is amazing.
Chair Roblin, members of the committee, Trevor Steele with
Steele.
The City of Eugene. And I just wanted to go ahead and echo what's already been said, that the City of Eugene doesn't necessarily have a position on this particular bill, but we do want to make sure that the conversation about cost sharing, cost shifts from the counties to all the parties is a discussion that we have during the interim with all of the parties. Feel that there are a lot of different issues with this. This is a very complex topic, and as the legislative session is heating up and moving forward very quickly right now, that this is something that needs the thought and the time that we can take during the interim that we can't necessarily take right now.
I guess the one thing I would say to all the cities, there is a rulemaking process that's going on right now that the Secretary of State is involved with. and I think they invite anyone who wants to be a part of the rulemaking, and it may be imperative that if they're going to start figuring out how to partition it better, that you would be involved in that, because the solution after the rules actually get worked and people believe, wow, that's a pretty good apportionment, then our job becomes much easier, because we just say, that was a great job of apportionment, and all we really have to do is say, go forth and send out your bills. So I would encourage you to be involved in any of the rulemaking processes that go along that kind of start getting at how this works.
We plan to.
Okay. Any other? Representative Edwards.
And thank you, Chair Rowland. And I don't, in light of my last comments, I don't want anybody thinking that I'm not sensitive to the costs being that would be borne by the cities if they were brought into the, all this. I am sensitive to that. I'm a little more sensitive to the cost being borne by the counties, though. And so that's why I did not bring the cities into my original bill, because I knew that we'd have a parade through here of city folks trying to kill that bill. But that's why I, you know, as a state legislator, I'm interested in the state picking up its share of that cost. But I'm very, very troubled by the county funding situation, and it doesn't mean that I'm not sensitive to the city situation either. So,
Chair Oblin, Representative Edwards, if I may just respond briefly. Representative Edwards, we are happy to discuss this with you further. The city of Eugene is very sensitive to the costs that Linn County is bearing right now, especially because a lot of those costs the city is feeling in other ways through the services that the county provides. So as a timber-dependent county, we understand the shape that Linn County's in, and it's a conversation that we definitely want to have with them and with you and other interested parties as we move forward with this. So we look forward to having that conversation. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. Seeing no further witnesses, we're going to close the public hearing on House Bill 3107. And, yeah, which work sessions do we want to go? I think we're going to go first. We're going to open the work session on House Bill 3033 first. And I'll let a short explanation.
Yes. Thank you, Chair Roblin. House Bill 3033 limits the signature gathering period to 2 years for a petition to initiate or refer county or city measures. You've already had a public hearing on this matter during which we discussed the need for time limits on currently unlimited city and county petitions and a possible amendment regarding coverage exclusion for other time limitations that may exist on petitions provided by city and county ordinance. You have in front of you a proposed -1 amendment that has been prepared in response to some of those concerns. It limits applicability of House Bill 3033 to city or county initiative measures by deleting reference to referrals throughout the text. Secondly, it restricts the applicability of the two-year time limitation on petitions to those petitions for which there are no other time limits provided by city or county ordinance.
Okay, thank you very much. And I think it was the clerks that had mentioned to us about the differing time,
right.
The differing time elements in the county's initiative and referendum. Have you seen the amendments? Because I was going to, do they get at all those things that you brought up?
It appears to, yeah. It's mostly
strategic.
Right. I want
to have this. Why don't you come on up in front? Because it is a work session, and we're going to invite you up, just because these amendments were crafted in large part from some of the testimony that you gave, and I just wanted to make sure that we got at all of the issues with regard to certain referendums that are 90 days and other things. So we didn't want to undo those and cause a different problem. So we think this does that.
Chair Roblin, members of the committee, do you have the amendments?
Yes.
Okay. I got them earlier today, too. Legislative Council sent them. And had several people look them over, too. And to all of us, they look to be fine.
Okay. That's what... I just wanted to make sure if anybody had any questions of the clerks. This is the whole idea of getting it all aligned such that when we have referendums and initiatives at the county level, that they come under certain time limits for collection of those signatures similar to the ones that are at the state. So we didn't want to change the ones that they'd formulated at different than 2 years, but anything that was over 2 years, we wanted to have the two-year limitation. And I think that's what these amendments do. So with that, I'd entertain a motion.
Mr. Chair, I move the dash ones dated 4-13-09 into House Bill 3033.
Representative Edwards moves the dash one amendments to House Bill 3033, dated 4-13. Any discussion? Seeing none, any objection? Seeing none, so ordered. They are now part of the amendment. I would take the next motion.
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 3033. I move House Bill 3033 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Edwards moves House Bill 3033. To the floor with a due pass recommendation as amended. Any discussion? Seeing none, we'll take a roll call vote.
Representative Berard?
Aye.
Representative Gelser?
Aye.
Representative Jensen?
Aye.
Representative Nolan?
Yes.
Representative Reed?
Aye.
Vice Chair Berger?
Aye.
Vice Chair Edwards?
Aye.
Chair Roblin?
Aye. Motion passes, and we will assign a carrier. Anybody that would like to carry this bill?
No, carry.
Representative Edwards will carry this bill. And we're going to close our work session on House Bill 3033. And we're going to open a work session on... Make sure I get my agenda. Yeah. HJR 43. And we'll have a short explanation.
Thank you, Chair Roblin, members of the committee. House Joint Resolution 43 recognizes the importance of Oregon's small businesses to Oregon's economy and resolves to recognize Oregon's small businesses as stakeholders and key contributors to the economy. During your previous hearing on the matter, you discussed the importance of small businesses in Oregon and their impact on economic recovery, the need for adequate access for small businesses to economic development tools and resources, and the intangible benefits of small businesses in Oregon. A piece of background information, the majority, approximately 51% of Oregon employees, come from small businesses that represent 98% of Oregon's approximately 112,200 employees.
And with that, I take a motion from Representative Edwards.
Just one
Chair,
minor
I move.
Thing first.
Wait. Oh. Pardon?
I got to think that there's a typo in the last line of the background.
You.
It's either 112. I bet it's 112,000 employers. Because if we have only 112,000 employees in the state, we're in much worse shape than we thought we were.
Probably correct. Very good.
Good, actually.
These are drafts.
Unemployment is up.
90% cut.
Mr. Chair, I move HJR 43 to the floor with due pass recommendation.
Representative Edwards moves HJR 43 to the floor with a due pass recommendation and with a correction to our sheet, and we'll make sure that those numbers are correct.
It needs to be moved.
Oh, adopted. To be adopted.
No.
We'll go back and do this correctly.
Adopt. So the motion is to adopt HJR. That's a question. Okay, I move HJR 43 to the floor with a be adopted recommendation.
Representative Edwards moves HJR 43 to the floor with a be adopted recommendation. Okay, now we've got that correct. Any discussion? Seeing none, we'll take a roll call vote.
Representative Berard?
Aye.
Representative Gelser?
Aye.
Representative Jensen?
Aye.
Representative Nolan?
Yes.
Representative Reed?
Aye.
Vice Chair Berger?
Aye.
Vice Chair Edwards?
Aye. And the motion passes. We will... Representative Edwards?
That is one.
Carry that one, too? Okay. Very good. With that, we'll go back and we'll open a work session on 2820, House Bill 2820. Committee, with this one, we don't have all the physicals and stuff. We're going to wait for a while, and I'm not pushing them to do it. But there are some amendments, and I just wanted to see if people were interested in moving the amendments on 2820. This was the bill, if you remember, that came to, and we've actually got a couple different amendments in this one. I believe this is Representative Witt. Which came from Representative Witt, and it does some of the same things that the initiative, indirect initiative does, but it does it statutorily. And so there were a couple of amendments, and I wanted people to look those. Amendments, and I don't see anybody here, so we may have to wait on this because we can't do both of these. They kind of don't necessarily go together. So we can briefly describe the amendments, and we'll see if we want to move any further today or just move this bill to a later date.
Thank you, Chair Roblin, members of the committee. This is one of several proposals, as Chair Roblin indicated, introduced in the 2009 session, that would move Oregon towards some kind of an indirect initiative system. The Dash 1 amendments require the Initiative Petition Review Committee to conduct at least one public hearing on an initiative petition. The existing original bill makes that optional. That is the only change that comes about through the Dash 1 amendment. The Dash 2 amendment would make a number of changes to House Bill 2820, including a change that takes a somewhat different course with regard to the public hearing. It requires at least one public hearing be held not later than the 35th day after the Initiative Petition Review Committee receives a prospective petition for a state initiative measure. It also requires the committee to prepare and file with the Secretary of State an impartial summary of issues not exceeding 250 words, and requires that summary to be printed in the voter's pamphlet. And it expands the time within which the Attorney General is to provide a draft ballot title to the Secretary of State to 10 days from the 5 days set forth in the original House Bill 2820.
Mr. Chair, who brings the Dash 1s and the Dash 2s? Is it the original author of the bill?
I think that they consulted with the original people, but I believe it came from different groups, and I'm believing that the one group, I'll have to go back and find that. That's what I was, when I saw that there weren't people here who I was expecting. That's why I decided we probably aren't going to move either of these right now until they're here to give us an explanation of why they did that. So we will get that. And I know that some people got called away to another hearing, so that could have been it too. So any other discussion? I'm going to close our hearing on House Bill 2820. I won't necessarily move it forward. We can schedule it down the road when I get people who really want to come and have that conversation. So we'll just close our hearing on 2820. And then the last bill. Which was the other one?
2941.
We're going to open a short work session on 2941. Again, this one did not get the physical. It does have some amendments. Again, I don't see all the people here I was expecting, so we're going to move this one to a future date, too, and I don't think we have to work on the deal. So we'll close our work session on 2941. Oh, wait, they are here. Okay, thank you. Come on up. Identical ballot. Thank you. So this is a work session, but I did want to get some hearings on, you are going to speak to the amendments to this one, or just to the bill itself, to the amendments?
Chair Roblin, I'm Tim Hughes. I'm legislative assistant to Representative Chris Garrett.
Thank you.
And I'm happy to speak both to the bill and to
the amendments
if you'd
Thank
like.
You. And we would love to hear about the amendments before I move it, so thanks.
Chair Roblin, members of the Rules Committee, House Bill 2941, which was chief sponsored by Representative Chris Garrett, aims to curtail the costly practice of ballot title shopping by requiring the Attorney General to provide the same ballot title for two or more state initiative measures that he deems to be substantially similar. The committee has before them the -2 amendment to that bill. This is a short, simple amendment that narrows the scope of the bill so that the Attorney General is only required to provide the same ballot title for two or more initiative measures in the same election cycle. As you will recall from the bill's first public hearing a few weeks ago, Andrea Meyer of the ACLU of Oregon suggested this amendment. Representative Garrett asked you to consider the amendment because it gives the Attorney General's office greater flexibility in subsequent election cycles.
Thank you. And thank you for being here and pointing it out. So that's the amendment. And I think we should move the amendment into the bill. So I will.
Mr. Chair?
Yep.
I move the -2 amendment stated 4809 into House Bill 2941.
So Representative Edwards moves the -2 amendments dated 4809 to House Bill 2941. Any discussion? Any opposition to moving those in? Then we will take a roll call. Let's have a discussion. Nope. Take a roll call vote on the amendment.
Representative Garrard?
Nay.
Representative Gelser?
Yes.
Representative Jensen?
Yes.
Representative Nolan?
Yes.
Representative Reed?
Aye.
Vice Chair Berger?
No.
Vice Chair Edwards?
Aye.
Chair Roland?
Aye. Motion passes. They are now part of the amendments. We aren't going to move the bill today, but I will, because I need to have one more conversation. Just for the record, there was another, we received a notice, some information about this bill from one of our constituents that comes relatively often, Mr. Meek, who wasn't here available. I'll get a copy of that to everybody about the bill as well. So with that, now amended, we'll see if we get a physical. I don't expect that we're going to get it real soon because they're working on other than the Rules Committee right now. We will. I don't think we're going to get it before Wednesday or Thursday, so we'll just close the hearing on House Bill 2941. And when we get the stuff together, we'll get back to you and decide what people feel in this particular one. So thank you very much, and thank you. Good job. With that, is there any other business that needs to come before the Rules Committee today? I don't see any. As you know, we are not scheduled for Friday. Hopefully that will give people some time to get other things done. I know that I have some meetings scheduled because this meeting is not happening, so that we can get ready for the rest of the week. So with that, we will close our Rules meeting for today. Thank you all for being here.